action as they demand the presence of the chief of defense staff himself as they sought to discredit accusations that their client dishonorably was discharged from the military.
CBS is not Sebastian at all, because
let's allow him. I think he should be allowed to call the CDS if that is what he says will help.
Details as the military high command confirms he was dismissed from the military based on persistent offenses and act of misconduct.
The officer has been involved in a case of indebtedness to local Lebanese businessman, one Mr. Tariq Ezzedine, to a tune of $400 when he served with UNIFIL Gambit.
We have a 360 coverage of this particular matter here on Top Story. Our Top Story is always brought to you by Telecel, connecting energies and holy insecticide spray and coil. Enjoy a holy sleep. Now, tonight, lawyers for third accused Richard in the ambulance procurement trial, Richard Jagba, subject military high command to tense cross-examination as they demand the presence of the chief of defense staff himself as they seek to discredit accusations that their client was dishonorably discharged from the military. Now, the military high command has confirmed that the third accused in the ambulance trial was dismissed from the military service based on persistent offenses and acts of misconduct. Now, you will recall that Deputy Attorney General Alfred Tuyayabo on Thursday, June 27, tendered into evidence Richard Jagba's supposed dismissal letter from the Ghana Armed Forces, something Richard Jagba himself vehemently denied ever since he left the service 17 years ago. Now, he reiterated this denial on Pulse on Joy News. Listen.
Very strange, my brother, and that is why I'm contesting it, and that is why my lawyers are going to subpoena the military command
to come and explain this
to
letter.
To come and provide evidence to the consistent fraudulent conduct, the institutions that I owe, the people that I owe, the military trial proceedings that took place that conclusively found me guilty, for them to write such a thing about me. Mm-hmm. Without copying me, without confronting me, without giving me the natural justice for me to even defend myself. Oh. The letter is from Army headquarters. Mm-hmm. Military officers, they have their units. I was under Recce Regiment, and the Recce Regiment is under a Sergeant Command headed by a Brigadier General. So we respond directly to that Sergeant Command, then from there to the Army headquarters. So if you are writing something like this, you should have been quoting references from which this complaint
was made
from. By looking at the letter, there are no references on that letter at all. So it meant that the Army headquarters on its own, out of a vacuum, created this story of consistently fraudulent owing people institution because they didn't reference anything.
Well, but his denial was challenged in court today as the military confirmed that he was indeed sent a copy of the said letter, confirming his release. In court on Thursday, Secretary to the Military High Command and custodian of document at the Armed Forces, Nana Edujemfi, discounted Richard Jagba's allegation that he was never given a letter relating to his dismissal. Head of our legal affairs desk, Richard Kwajonyako, was in court for us and joins me in studio with details. Kojo, so on what account was the Military High Command subpoenaed, and what did they have to do with the ambulance trial?
So there are generally issues about the dismissal of Mr. Jagba from the military high command. You know, he exited the military in 2007, but in our criminal jurisprudence, character traits are not tendered in evidence, or they are inadmissible, but unless one of the parties tenders it or uses it, then the other party can go on and then bring the person's previous misdeeds. And so that was really what happened. And you know that the Deputy Attorney General Fred Tuyayabo was here, and then he indicated that indeed the man was dismissed based on some fraudulent misconduct and all of that. And so Mr. Richard Jakpa had to subpoena the military high command to provide details or to give answers to the questions they were going to ask. And so that is why the military high command had to come to the dock.
So it was Richard Jakpa who subpoenaed them. Now, let's talk about the claims of Richard Jakpa. And how did Nana Edujenfi answer that?
Well, so there were claims generally, Mr. Jakpa, according to the military high command, he even was charged with AWOL, absent without leave. They listed series of activities or offenses that he conducted. But topical among the activities or the misdeeds of Mr. Richard Jakpa when he was with the military high command were these two things. When he took money from a Lebanese businessman who was resident in Ghana and never returned that money. And the second one was when he was in dire financial straits and had to be given money, a loan of $300 from his unit, and he failed. Upon persistent demand, he still failed to return the money, and so that amount of money had to be converted into cedis and deducted from his salary. Let's listen to Mr. Nana Edujenfi explaining in details.
The first report dated 18 January 2002 was submitted by Captain Yi Osuasa, the then squadron leader, when the officer, after attending a course in Accra, failed to return to the unit after the course. Captain B also submitted another report dated 28 June 2002 on the officer, when he again failed to return to his unit after officer's practical promotion exam in 2002. His second appearance on my interview was in connection with this. In addition to these acts of indiscipline and unprofessional behavior, the officer has been involved in a case of indebtedness to local Lebanese businessman, one Mr. Tariq Ezidin, to a tune of $400 when he served with Unifil Gambat 57. It was upon strong messages from the Gancon headquarters, the Ghana contingent headquarters, that the officer settled the amount. Prior to this, a Ghanaian local brought a case before me where items including monies were given to him from Beirut by Ghanaians residing there. Items and the monies were not delivered until he was instructed to do so. The officer was nominated to attend orientation course on RATEP ICV course at the RSP Regimental Headquarters at Recce Regiment for the period May 3rd to 28 May 2004. He attended classes for only 3 days in week one, 1 day in week two, and one in week three. He has now been charged for AWOL. The charge sheet and the proceedings of a summary of evidence will be submitted separately. Additionally, there are quite a number of undocumented cases of indiscipline and misconduct on the part of the officer, which both officers and men of the regiment can attest to. The conduct of the officer of Lieutenant Jakpa in the regiment, without doubt, seemed to have reached its climax since both formal and informal interviews, informal interviews are not yielding any positive results. Respectfully submitted for your necessary action, K. Okonkwo, Lieutenant Colonel, Commanding Officer.
So these were the list of, the misconduct that Richard Jakpa was alleged to have, involved himself in when he was a military officer. But he has denied ever seeing the letter that was communicating his dismissal. What was the response from the military?
So the response has been that whichever misdeeds that he may have committed, offenses he committed there, I mean, he was invited to the disciplinary committee, he attended meetings where he was cautioned and all of that. So all of these were put together, and then the letter was sent, was given him. And so they signed the letter, and Mr. Jakpa indeed had a copy of the letter.
Informal interviews are not yielding any positive results. Respectfully submitted for your necessary action, K. Okonkwo, Lieutenant Colonel, Commanding Officer. And the addressees are action addressees, external action addressees. The letter was submitted, as indicated earlier, to the command from the CO, the battalion, to the headquarters of Northern Command, was serving in Sudan, the Northern Command was there. Then, info addressee, they gave Army Headquarters, two Recce Squadron in Sudan, and info. Information, Lieutenant
R.A. Jakpa. These are the addresses. So, from what you just read, the third accused actually given a copy of this special report. And that is what indicated. formulated in Exhibit PFC. And that is what we indicated. That was indicated. You indicated, formulated in Exhibit PFC.
Yes. That's right.
Now, you see a statement about his indebtedness to a local Lebanese businessman in the sum of $400. Is it the same indebtedness featured in SBP of $300?
So that was, a confirmation there by the army that in fact this was the letter. But did the court admit these documents into evidence?
Yes, so the court admitted these two letters into evidence. Mm. One, the loan he took from the unit and couldn't pay or didn't pay until in 2007 when it was deducted from his salary. And then two, the agreement he had with the Lebanese or the business that he had with the Lebanese man, the $400, it was also admitted into evidence by the court.
Mm. Doesn't mean that the CDS will not come to court to testify.
So in court, it became an issue. One party, lawyers for Richard Jakwa, indicated that they still needed the CDS to appear in court to answer some questions. But the Attorney General objected and said they don't see the need because the CDS at this moment is not a material witness to it.
Anyways, so now let's address the that you are bringing, you still need the chief of defense staff.
I'm going to get the nature of subpoenas issued on the witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
The CDS is not a majority at all because it's the same document.
Sir, you may step down. We are done.
Thank you. The subpoenas were charged with the same document on the part by phone for the reports has come into the box, tended the same documents as the ask questions on them. Really, my submission is that the CDS, in all respects, is not a material witness that should not be invited by the court. Finally, it amounts to presentation of cumulative evidence, which is prohibited by me.
The reason why the CDS should not come to testify based on his determination that. Because we subpoena, the subpoena is of 2 points. There's a testificandum aspect of it, and there's a legal aspect of it. So I don't see the basis of what you say that because some documents were
tendered. That's not fine. Honorable Attorney General, in this criminal proceeding, we have someone who is facing rather serious charges. And if the person thinks that he needs the CDS to be able to make his case, let's allow him. I think he should be allowed to call the CDS if that is what he says will help.
So, Kodo, now the CDS is expected to come and testify. Will he be the only person to do so in court, or are there other persons billed to testify in court?
So apart from the CDS, we have Major General B. Ziblim Ayurongo. He's expected to testify. We have Julia Asante of Stanbic Bank. She's also expected to testify. Professor Nuhu Zakaria will also be in the dock to testify. In fact, we have the Speaker of Ghana's Parliament, who at the time was a health minister. And so he also will appear or enter the dock, swear an oath to testify on the 8th of October. So it is expected that the written addresses of the parties will be ready in October. And then we are expecting the judgment in this particular trial in November.
Well, interesting. This is still the top story. We have more analysis on this coming up. Let me bring in private legal practitioner Samson Ladi Ayanini into this conversation. Samson, I'm grateful to you for joining. Now, what really is happening with the focus on what led to his sack from the armed forces?
Right. I suppose you want to go back to the question you asked the last time when this issue came up as to whether or not the character of the witness is of any relevance to an ambulance purchase matter. By our evidence act, and we are not able, once again, let me repeat, we are not able to make certain commentary because this matter is live and judgment will be rendered.
Okay.
Now, our evidence act in various relevant portions of it speak to the fact that the character of a witness is very important. And to that effect, a court in determining the credibility of a witness may consider a matter which is relevant to prove or disprove the truthfulness of the testimony of the witness at the trial. Now, the law says that some of the matters which may be relevant to the determination of the credibility of the witness, remember, the emphasis is on the credibility of the witness, and that parties in the matter under certain circumstances are allowed to introduce the character of a witness to attack or to support their credibility either way. And the law says the matters that may be relevant to the determination of the credibility of the witness include the character of the witness as to traits of honesty or truthfulness or their opposites. So you need to mark that. Traits of honesty or truthfulness or their opposites. So you can clearly see that this is what is playing up, because the destroyer got to a point where the credibility of the attorney general was brought to the fore as to whether or not he was conducting himself properly, or he was misconducting himself as far as the rules were concerned in engaging with an accused person without their lawyer. And this took center stage and led to processes, applications for even the case itself to be terminated because of the impugned conduct of the attorney general. So now this is where you are, where it has necessitated the need to bring in this particular witness who has brought in a tape recording of a conversation between him and the attorney general, and has sought to use that to impugn and damage and destroy the entire trial to the point of seeking to botch the whole trial. So the attorney general then decided that there was a need to introduce evidence about the character of the witness, the person who is in the court pontificating or saying things about, you know, someone else's character. That is where this has come in. And the law clearly, under circumstances, allows character traits affecting credibility to be used to make certain determinations. And that is what you can see going on and playing out now in the courtroom.
Which means that if he had not attacked the attorney general, possibly this would not have come up.
First, the attorney general is not a witness in the case. But in a very novel situation, his character, professional integrity became the subject, primary subject in the course, almost to damage him and to botch the entire trial. And therefore, it obviously became necessary for what is going on. The attorney general introduced evidence to show that this is someone you cannot trust, so to speak, because this is his character, this is his background. Now, whether they got that from proper custody is also a matter of question of legal propriety, which the JAQUES, you know, team have sought to establish in the process, because that could also affect the entire document that was tendered if the propriety is questionable. There is a potential that it could lead to this. So you can see that this is what the Attorney General sought to do, to use his character to undermine his testimony, to create a doubt in how to believing in him or not.
Okay.
Mm. And to support his own version of the of what he has been saying, that the witness is not credible, and so on and so forth. And now they are now also seeking to establish properly that the things you claim the witness did, JAQUES did, that led to his release. We want to subject that through the fire of cross-examination to test it, whether it can stand. And that's what they are doing now. And as you can see, the CDS has to also come in, and then various other people lined up. These were subpoenaed.
Okay.
So they are coming there not on their own sort of volition. Someone is compelling them to come. But of course, the Attorney General is entitled to also cross-examine those people, and he's taking due advantage of that to use that to further see how he can confirm the purpose for which he introduced the document of his release from the army.
Okay. But Samson, stay with me. Let me bring in Colonel Retired Festus Abuaje, who is a retired army staff. Colonel, I'm grateful to you for joining. Now, what is the process of dishonorably discharging one from the army?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. There are broadly two forms of military tribunals based on the gravity or the severity of the offenses in question, and also based on the rank of whoever is, you know, being tried. So we have the summary trial, where one commanding officer sits in his office and a soldier is brought in, marched by the regimental sergeant major. I don't know what the equivalent title is now. And then the charges are read, and then he's not asked to plead, I think. But then you give him a chance, or her a chance, to explain. If there are witnesses, they come and testify. And then the commanding officer will make a decision. And that's the end of it. That's summary trials. Now, in the case of this officer, I suspect minimum that there would have been a disciplinary court-martial, in which case it wouldn't have been a commanding officer alone, but a panel of officers at his rank level, which would have been the lieutenant, and not anybody, I think, who may be junior to him. Now, that also follows the similar process. His charges will be read, but in this instance, the disciplinary court martial, he would have been entitled to legal counsel. And so far in the conversation, I haven't heard either from him or from the armed forces that there was a disciplinary court martial and he was afforded, you know, legal counsel. Now, in that disciplinary court martial, witnesses will be called. So a number of the things that are being referenced, he owed the regimental fund, and he owed this, he owed that, and he didn't pass his promotion. All of these are documentary evidence or human evidence that will be adduced. And then you'll be given the opportunity to cross-examine, you know, to refute, to do whatever. All of it will be recorded. Now, at the end of it, the president of the disciplinary court martial will write a report with recommendations. And because a commanding officer cannot dismiss or release an officer from the service, reference was made to the appropriate superior authority, the ASA. At the time, it was the brigade commander, one brigade, which is Ateshi. Now that is the general officer commanding Southern Command, So it is that appropriate superior authority who has to approve the sentence, in this case, the dishonorable or whatever release. That will be a documentary evidence. It must exist. If it doesn't exist, and the letter that is being referenced is only a letter written by my good friend, I think he left us a colonel, Mortuary, then I think something would have been missing. The higher level is a general court martial, and I think I heard a summary of evidence being referred to. So to start with, an officer will be appointed to call all the witnesses and the accused officer, in this case, is he Roland or Roger?
Richard.
He'll record all the evidence from them. So it is that body of evidence that is then presented for a decision as to whether there should be a general court-martial to start with.
The army explains that there were formal and informal interviews of the accused, and that did not yield any results, his dismissal.
Let me explain quickly before we continue. Nobody can dismiss even a soldier based on interviews. So we are not talking about him changing his alleged misbehavior or misconduct. That is not the issue in question. My interest is in the circumstances or the procedure that was used to release him from the Ghana Armed Forces. So if you are called on interview by your commanding officer, at the time Lieutenant Colonel Opontri, it doesn't mean that you've been given adequate warning and therefore you are being released. Because no CO has the powers to release any officer, not even a soldier. Every decision relating to release will have to go to a higher level for approval. And that approval, the procedure plus the approval, will be published. In this case, by the military secretary who is being called before the court. So we are talking about procedure which entails a lot of documentary evidence. And I think what Mr. Jaffa, because lieutenants can be called Mr. anyway, is contesting is that he was not appropriately tried. So if the armed forces has the evidence that he was appropriately tried, either by a disciplinary court-martial or a general court-martial, that evidence will be brought to court. The other difficulty I have, and I'm speaking as a layperson, because the best that I did in the Ghana Army was what we call military law course. Every officer does it, or let's say a number of officers do that. It's very, very limited in terms of, law. But when you call the CDS, at the time that Lieutenant Colonel Pontry was CO, the current CDS was not a Lieutenant Colonel. He was not the commanding officer of the Recce Regiment. He himself is an armored officer. Even if he was at the regiment at the time, he might have been, let's say, a squadron commander, an officer commander. Now, bringing him to the court, as somebody was saying, he has no material knowledge of anything to come and present. Those who should speak for the armed forces when they are authorized by the CDS will be the Director of Legal Service, DLS.
Well, this case is still in course, so let's see how it progresses. I'm grateful to you, Colonel Festus Abuaje, retired, for joining us. But Samson, what will be the weight that will be placed on this process?
Let me just read a specific provision of the Evidence Act. Let me just read two of those subsections of Section 83.
Briefly.
Character traits affecting credibility. Subsection 1 says, subject to subsection 2, evidence of good character to support the credibility of a witness is not admissible unless evidence which impugns the good character of the witness has been admitted for the purpose of attacking the credibility of the witness. And the 2 says, an accused in a criminal action may introduce evidence of good character to support the credibility of the accused. And unless the accused first introduces that evidence, the prosecution may not attack the credibility of the accused by introducing evidence, including evidence of a previous conviction, to impugn the good character of the accused. The lawyers know what they are doing. The attorney general knows what it is doing. The court eventually will use this to make a determination as to where this sits in the whole ambulance purchase transaction.
Grateful to you for joining, Lawyer Samson Ladia. This has been Top Story. Coming up next year is